Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. The program's website is insideed.com, and there you can download or listen to podcasts of all previous Inside Education programs. I'm Sean Delaney, and you can follow the program on Twitter with the handle at InsideEd. At the end of February, the Computers and Education Society of Ireland, or CESI for short, held its annual conference in Dublin City University, DCU. On last week's programme, you heard Professor Mark Brown from DCU, who was a keynote speaker at the conference. I also introduced you to Kira Brennan, who presented a workshop at the conference. And this week, I bring you the remainder of my interview with Kira, where she talks in particular about how technology can support classroom assessment. Kira teaches sixth class in St. Peter's Primary School in Bray and lectures part-time in Creative Technologies for Teaching and Learning at the Marino Institute of Education. Kira is passionate about equality of access to education, about education in disadvantaged settings, and about the use of technology to enhance learning in the classroom. I began this part of my interview by asking Kira to tell me what her presentation at the conference would be about.
I'm presenting with Mary Jo Bell from St. Anne's in Shankill, and we're going to be presenting on assessment tools and feedback tools in the classroom. So we're going to be focusing on three resources, three websites, namely Padlet.com, which is ideal for open sourcing feedback immediately in the classroom. Then secondly, we're going to be looking at Kahoot, which is a website and an app used for assessment in the classroom. And then thirdly, we have Socrative, which is another website along the same lines as Kahoot, but probably a little bit more advanced and more suited to senior and second level classes.
Now, you're a primary teacher yourself.
I am indeed,
are you using these applications?
I am. I would use Padlet quite a lot and also Kahoot. I find the third website, Socrative, is a little bit more demanding for the younger children, and it requires a slightly higher level of literacy, and it's a little bit more difficult to navigate. So from a practical point of view, I get more use out of Padlet and Kahoot, but I always present on things that I would endorse fully in the classroom and that I use myself. And while I may not have used the third website with students, I use it quite a bit when I give the PDST courses and also with students in Marino.
Okay, so if you take us to the Padlet, how does Padlet work in your classroom?
Okay, so what we do with Padlet is the students must have a device. It's a device neutral website though, so they provide feedback that appears on the interactive whiteboard behind me, so I can use it for taking stock of where we're at in a lesson, for the children to give me immediate feedback, where they can post a comment, a picture, a video, anything relating to a particular topic, so I can see how well they're engaging at a particular point. I will often use it at the beginning or the end of a lecture or a lesson. So I might use it at the start to see what their previous related knowledge is in a topic, to see where I need to kind of pitch the lesson, so to speak, especially in areas like SCSE, History, Geography, Science. I may maybe pre-teach language using this tool. So I will give them a word and they have to give me something back with it, and we engage with it at that level. And then at the end of the lesson, I find Padlet ideal for, as an exit ticket type system. So it sounds quite severe, but you don't leave the room until you contribute something to the room or you share something that you got from that lesson. And we would align it a lot of the times at the beginning and the end of the lesson to our Walton Wolf system that we have in the classroom. So what we had planned to learn, what we did take, what we did learn from the lesson, which I find ideal because it feeds into my plans and my objectives and everything for what I'm trying to do with them.
And before we continue with that, can you just explain the Walt is?
We are learning too.
And the Wilf? Wilf,
what we have learned basically from this, from any lesson or activity basically.
So are the children then connected to the device right throughout a lesson, or is it at certain times you say take out your devices?
Now, ideally every child would have their own device. Unfortunately, that's a pipe dream in my situation, as it is in majority of primary classrooms. So we tend to, like, best case scenario, I would have four devices that are mobile at all stages in the room, and they would be passed from particular group situations, so I align it to the class group system. And maybe it's not an individual feedback system, but maybe think pair share, so either pairs or groups that are giving me feedback. But that's good as well because it's collaborative, and oftentimes as well they'll be called on to interact with Padlet whilst also manoeuvring the internet and resources that I want them to be familiar with. And at sixth class level, I'm always saying to them I want them to be good users of the internet. So maybe if we're doing something on, say, like recently we were doing the Easter Rising, like every classroom in the country, and we were manoeuvring through different sites, Skullnet, we were looking at stuff on the BBC website, we were looking at stuff on the Shomaranga website, and they were manoeuvring around these websites, working together and giving feedback and presenting it then via their table to the room on the interactive whiteboard. And I find that really good. It helps the interactive whiteboard come alive, and it becomes a very collaborative process then. But ideally, they would all have their own devices. Unfortunately, it's not something.
So is it more collective assessment then rather than individual
assessment? Yes, and it can be anonymous. Like I would always say, if you can visualise, it's like a whiteboard system, Padlet as a website, and when the children contribute, it's like a sticky note that appears on the screen. So as they are contributing from their seats, information appears in real time on the interactive whiteboard. And via this sticky note, they can have a heading, a subheading or a caption basically, and then they can have more text or else a video, a photograph, a web link, whatever it is, and that appears in real time as they're contributing it, and they connect to the wider Padlet on the screen through a URL that I share with them, and it's immediate. And as I said, it can be anonymous, but I generally get them to put their name where the sub caption would go. So I know where, or the name of their group, their own name, whatever it is. So I know generally where it's coming from. So it's not a formal assessment. It's more taking stock. And it's maybe, you know, when we talk about assessment of and for learning, it helps me to maybe see where they are before they actually are assessed on a topic. It's a nice discrete assessment, really, to see where we need to review or look back on.
So the only thing then the children are looking at on the whiteboard is their own comments, or would there be lesson content up there as well?
It depends, I suppose, what tack you take. I would have also used Padlet in the past, but I use it less like this now, maybe because I'm in a senior class. I like them to be contributing with me. But previously, when I had second class 3 years ago, I would have used it as like, say, a place to start a lesson. And I would have planned my lesson from the Padlet board. And maybe the children didn't have any devices. So I was maybe walking around the room with my iPad, and as things were being suggested to me, I was the one adding to the Padlet wall, but maybe remotely around the room where I was interacting with them. But again, they were seeing everything on the whiteboard. It depends what sort of a lesson you want. It depends how much interaction you expect from the children. And it depends whether you want them to be producing content with you or whether you want them to be engaging with your content from the start.
And how do the children respond to it?
They love it, because certainly in my class, you know, they don't want to be passive in, you know, all activities and lessons. They want to be active in it. And they love that feeling of what I'm writing from my seat is relevant to the class now because it's on the board. So you're providing an immediate audience. And certainly in my class, the kids love that feeling of they're providing, I suppose, a source of information or something that's useful and a learning platform for everyone. And that level of pride and engagement really improves in the classroom, much more so than if I was asking them to write whatever they're writing in their copy or in a hardback notebook or something. This is suddenly relevant to everybody, because I find an audience through technology really improves, I suppose, two things, pride, and then secondly, attainment levels always improve because they want to do better when they're showcasing their work in front of their peers, you know.
And is there a record of it afterwards, or does it end when you turn off the computer?
No, there's a record, and we would save every Padlet that we've created. And I would use that as a record of our work. And then when it comes to the end of the month and we're doing a bit of review or before a test, we will look back on what we created together. And I can share that link out, and I can embed that link in, when we do it regularly, in our class blog. We wouldn't really put it on the school blog, that's more public. I would put it on a web page, on a little Weebly page, and they can use that then on the Wednesday and the Thursday nights leading up to the dreaded Friday test. And it's a little bit more fun and engaging than giving them, you know, a stale workbook page to work off of, or, you know, that sort
of
thing.
And do they access it?
They do.
This will be at home now.
They do indeed, yeah. And little things like if we've sometimes within the Padlet, if a good point comes up and I have the iPad in my hand, I will record them and that audio clip relating to that section of whatever we were doing about 1916, something about Countess Markovic, I will put that audio embedded into the Padlet, and then they will access that remotely then.
And how is Kahoot different to Padlet?
Okay, so Kahoot then is a quizzing website or app, and basically how it works is you need an interactive board in the room, or rather a projector. They need to be, whatever you have, they need to be engaging with something centrally. So what happens is there's two websites with Kahoot. And that's something we always try to get across to teachers or to educators who are choosing to use it. Kahoot.it is what the students access or the participants access. And then getkahoot.com is where the teachers or the educators create the website. So what I do is I go to GetKahoot and I essentially create a quiz. I can have any number of questions and there are anything up to four possible answers to it. So it's multiple choice. Yeah. And you can have two, you can have three, you can have four potential answers. You, as you're making the quiz, highlight the one that's correct, and then the system knows, well, that's the correct answer, and then your quiz goes live. And you can store that quiz there on the Get Kahoot website and access that at any time. You can later go back and edit that, modify it, whatever. What you do with the children is they go to Kahoot.it, and each quiz that you've created comes with a PIN number. So you activate your quiz from Get Kahoot, but the children go to Kahoot.it, enter the PIN that's on the board from the Get Kahoot site, and they engage with the quiz from their seats. Now, they must have something to look at because the question appears on the screen with the four possible answers. What the children see or the students see on their screen are four blocks or boxes that are denoted through colour and shape, which is really clever because that's how, in my experience, anything that goes back to colour and shape works really well in the classroom. And they must look up, look down, look up, look down, and make sure that if, say, what is the capital city of Ireland, if my possible answers are Dublin, Paris, London, Berlin, they need to go, yes, Dublin is red box, I look down, press red box. Now, it's slightly flawed in that it's fastest finger. So a child may have gotten it correct, but they're not going to necessarily win the quiz. But again, I use it in an informal way. It's just more to get them set up, get them excited about their learning. You get immediate feedback as you go through. The top five in any quiz appear after every question, and then ultimately you're left with a winner. Now, what I find really useful is at the end, when you're finished the quizzing system, an entire Excel layout of each individual child's answers and where what they got right and wrong is produced for you, and you get overall class percentage totals. So that's what I focus on as well with the kids. You know, when we do Kahoot, it's not necessarily individual endeavour. I never really show them the percentage. I do put that in their assessment folder and I put that into their Evernote portfolios. But I'd be much more into saying, OK, guys, it's Wednesday. We got 78% as a class. Let's see if we can break 80 tomorrow, you know. And they love that.
So the record then that exists at the end of it, even though there, whoever hits the button first is the winner.
Yes.
There still is a record of all the correct and incorrect answers.
There is indeed. And actually, if you would prefer, and I know some teachers do this, rather than do it as a collective endeavour where it is fastest finger, they get the children to do it as a station and it's just one child doing the quiz at any one time. And that's probably a fairer reflection. It's maybe more sound use of the website if you're going to be relying on the data that it's giving you. But obviously I'm a primary school teacher, so it's more about levels of engagement and enjoyment that I would be focused on.
How, Ciara, did you get so interested in technology and education as a teacher?
I did law in UCD before I studied my postgrad in Marino, and I was always into tech and computers anyway. And I was always really interested in how technology to me is a real leveler. You know, even in my early days of before I even got the postgrad, I was doing a bit of subbing, and I always felt that the child who may not access things in one particular way always found some level of engagement through use of technology. And around that time, you know, interactive whiteboards were really being rolled out around schools and teachers were doing really exciting stuff that didn't exist when I was in school. So I was really, you know, interested in that. And then when I got into Marino, I found the ICT lectures was very engaging, and I liked that idea of being good at creating content for the classroom. You know, I'm not one for necessarily relying on books, and certainly I've ended up in a DESH school and I find that the books are way off the mark as to where maybe a lot of your class might be. So I like being good at creating content and resources, so I found technology helped me to do that. And now that I'm out in the classroom and I'm 5 years into my career, I definitely see that while it's a little bit more work for me as a classroom teacher to prepare resources and to be on top of things because things are changing all the time, I feel that there's a level of credibility about the learning. I feel that I can differentiate easily with using ICT. And without doubt, there's a level of engagement I get from using ICT that I don't think I would get if I wasn't using it, you know. And that's ultimately what it comes back to. The kids enjoy the school day more and things run more smoothly because of how I choose to use ICT. But I only try to use effective tools. I'm not obsessed with it. You know, there's a lot of traditional things about my room as well. And I'd be very old school in many ways, but I try to bring in as many modern, I suppose, contemporary, engaging elements as I can.
You've told us a bit about how you use assessment and technology related to assessment. Could you bring us through some of the other tools or applications that you use, maybe in a typical day or a typical week in your class?
Okay, well, there's three things, I suppose, that we would do primarily in sixth class. The first thing would be our use of social media. So we would engage with the school Twitter account on a daily basis, and we use that as a place to really celebrate the day. And again, that aligns beautifully to what we're trying to do in our school in a wider context as regards homeschooling. So we're Deshband One School. Celebration of the school day is really important to us. And disseminating information about the little things that really matter to us and the things we prioritise is easily done through Twitter. And the children really love that. And then the spin-off is we're also showing, you know, a proper effective use of social media tools, acknowledging we know they're engaging with these tools outside of school, but we project best use practice at all time. So social media would be number one, I suppose, and Twitter would be there.
And so, is Twitter the only social media platform you use?
No, we actually engage with things like Vine. We use various different other tools, like we would bring in polls, Mentimeter and stuff, and try and engage from the home. We would bring in...
What are those? Vine and Mentimeter, what
are
they?
Mentimeter is a poll system, so we use it to get parental feedback on things, so things about anything from homework to trips, stuff like that. We also use Vine for short 6-second videos in the classroom, and it's basically where we call it like the Harry Potter moving picture. So it's like the moments that you can't quite capture in a picture, we make short videos, we have that connected into our Twitter account, we send it out. Equally, while it's not strictly social media, any other tools we use, such as Animoto for creating interactive videos through photographs, we would tweet that out directly through the school account. Flipsnack, if we make an interactive book using that website, we tweet that out. If any of the children are using any cartoon apps or anything like that, we tweet that out. So Twitter is the vehicle through which we get everything out, really. But then the second thing we do is blogging. So we have a school blog, which we're all really proud of, that we all work equally on. But a lot of, I suppose, my class being sixth class, the content that we would produce probably would be the most engaging, I suppose it's naturally going to be that way. And it's a matter of real pride to the children when their work goes up on our school blog, and we get really good levels of engagement from our community. But way beyond that, we would connect with schools all over the country and all over the world through our blogging content. And suddenly the work matters, you know, and they have a platform to really say, you know, my work is as good as anybody around the country. And pride, I think, is something I've learned a lot about, and ambition in school. Certainly at DESH level, my principal has been very good at instructing us that that's the number one thing you need to foster in these kids, that they get up in the morning and they say, I can and I will. It's not, oh God, this is effort. It's, of course you can do this, while always being cognizant of the extra supports they need. There is no reason to, you know, project down. You should be reaching up all the time. And the internet and our blog really helps that. And then the third thing we try to do, and it's a little bit more challenging because it's, you know, demanding financially on school, and oftentimes I just have to provide my own material for it. We try to do as much as we can with maker technology. And as a school, we've always been really into Lego and Connects. So we've tried to harness the interest in, I suppose, kind of an engineering field. And we've done a lot with robotics, makey-makey technology, try to bring in stuff with coding, but make coding real. So we built an Obot robot and programmed him to do something. We've programmed, we've made like a dance mat through PE and working with the younger children through our coding work. But again, that's making coding real because there's a physical object at the end of it, which I find really helps to engage the students more. We've done stuff with electric paint. So we've drawn games and stuff like that. Again, just trying to make technology something real and fun. And the kids who aren't necessarily into the coding or blogging side of things, they generally like the designing and making aspect of it, I've found. So this is engaging those children. So hopefully everybody in the class is getting something out of what we're trying to do.
And how do you keep on top of all of these things, the new applications and the coding and so on?
Yeah, Twitter. I find I get everything from Twitter. You know, as somebody who really believes in sharing, I don't think we share enough in education. I love that I can just, you know, log into Twitter and I can get ideas from educators I really feel are on the same page as me at the click of a button. And while I engage with a lot of CPD in my own time anyway, and I attend conferences like this, and you know, I run and attend teach meets whenever I can, I find just the water cooler moments that you get on Twitter of, oh, this is a good website, give it a go, or here's a blog post about what we did, why don't you try it? That really works for me, and we try to contribute back as best we can. I just feel that if something works for me in my sixth class in Bray, then it's probably going to work for you in your sixth class in Galway, Waterford, Kilkenny, wherever you are. And we need to share more. So I find Twitter fantastic for that. Now, it can be overwhelming, and there are some times where you feel, I couldn't do that. And I went to BET for the first time this year. And
what is BET?
BET is the education conference and kind of showcase in the Excel Arena in London. It was held in January, and I went over with Class Dojo, who I do a little bit of work for. Class Dojo being a behaviour management, positive behaviour management points website system thing. And when I was over at BET, I was completely and utterly overwhelmed, but I left with a sense of it shouldn't be about doing everything. And sometimes people are into things like this, and I'm worse at doing this than anyone. You know, you feel like you need to be doing everything. You don't. Sometimes the best teachers in this field and the ones who are using technology most effectively introduce the little things, and they introduce them well. And be ambitious, of course, but don't beat yourself up over it, and really be reflective in what you're doing. Don't just do everything and hope it's working. Try something and be honest with yourself. If it's not working, and it may not work for you, your classroom, just don't do it. There are things I did with my sixth class last year that just won't work with this year's group, and that's fine. Like last year's group were much more into podcasting and they loved that. This year's class, they're not so into that. That's fine. They're more into stuff like video, and we do stop motion animation, that kind of thing. And that's fine. And you build your tools to suit the class in front of you and your own interests too.
I'm conscious that, you know, you talk about the traditional things, and I'm conscious that if a teacher from a decade or two decades ago was to listen to our conversation, they'd be saying, yeah, what are they talking about? So do you ever have any worries about the downside of technology, or that children are becoming too dependent on it, or anything like that?
I suppose I've been very lucky for the last few years I've been in sixth class, and it doesn't matter so much if I am doing something drastically different to what came before them. I would be a little bit more aware of what I'm doing if I had a class further down the system, and they might be transitioning into a much more traditional system the year after and subsequent years. So that's my first thing. I can be a little bit more, sure, let's throw everything at them. Secondly, I do have major concerns. I have huge concerns about social media, and that's why I've actually become one of those people, I suppose, who's an advocate of using it in the classroom, because I feel that we have to face up to their potential harmful use of social media. And I could scaremonger all I like, but the best way I can teach them to behave correctly on the internet is by, I hope, mirroring best practice myself through use of our school and class social media sites. But I would have huge concerns in that area. Thirdly, I think, and it's well-intentioned, so I don't mean to be critical to Irish schools or Irish parents, but we are app and tablet obsessed in Ireland at the minute. And one or two tablets can be really useful in the classroom to access certain apps and maybe for group activities and that. But there's too many schools with class sets of iPads or various other, you know, Surface tablets or whatever sitting in a classroom, and nobody knows how to quite effectively use them. So it's not just about having the technology, it's using them effectively. That's something we need to look at. We need to have honest conversations about, you know, it's not just about acquiring this equipment, it's how we're using it. And then I suppose my final thing will be, you know, I'm constantly talking about it and giving out about it, but broadband is so, so poor in our schools that I do worry that we're doing such amazing things where we have individuals, and more often than not it is individuals in individual schools trying to do amazing things, and that is wonderful, and every school needs an advocate for various different areas. Particularly, you need that ICT person in the school, whether you have a post of responsibility or not. But until broadband and the basic services improve, I do worry we're not going to be taking the rest of our staff with us. That's a real shame. And until we start doing the basic things right, I would worry about the overall message. Now, I would be, obviously, things are moving in the right direction as regards, you know, the digital strategy, and we are a little bit more aware of a national conversation in this area on it, but a lot of work has to be done to get to where I feel we need to be in comparison to our near neighbours, you know, across Europe.
And finally, Ciara, how do you think the classroom of the future will be different to the classroom that you're in, or maybe yours is closer to the future, but how do you see the future of technology in education, or the future of education itself, given the changes that have taken place in the last decade or two?
Well, hopefully, with all due respect to publishers out there, we won't be quite so reliant on books, and not even just we'll shift to e-books. I see that being as the first obvious step, but even moving beyond that, that the children will be a lot better at and will be able and will be harnessed through their own technology and access to technology to create their own resources. I see that as being a big one. I see us being able, hopefully, to let the children away on topics, not being quite so subject and timetable obsessed, that we, through technology, will be able to integrate and do things more thematically. I see coding being an inevitability in the classroom. I would hope that it will be adopted as more of a language tool, and it won't be coding in IT, it will be coding as the language of the future, you know, and really being the third language in our primary schools. Hopefully I see teachers being a little bit more brave as well, and that I totally understand there is initiative overload and people are absolutely bogged down in this, that and the other. And in a time of the moratorium on posts, it's such a difficult thing for a principal to ask teachers to take on even more responsibility. But the teachers will see that even a little bit of a step up on their level of engagement with ICT will help their classroom run that little bit more smoothly, and it will become a natural, seamless transition during the day, and we'll move away from, right, when you have look at your sixth class timetable, it's not a situation that you have 30 minutes in the computer room on a Thursday morning. It will be something that is integrated seamlessly throughout the day, and it is a methodology that is as natural as chalk and talk. It is just what we do. So that would be my hope. I wouldn't be fearful for the future, but I would hope that we would have advocates in the department who would be very understanding of where teachers are at, but be equally ambitious for what we want in the classrooms going forward.
And that vision for the classroom of the future comes from Ciara Brennan, who brings this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen to podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, Ciara Brennan, for her time, and to Adrian Webb and the entire SESI committee for their support at this year's conference. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.